Tune for the Positive Mind coming up. It is 1 p.m.
Hey everybody, we are back. Back with you, Kev O'Donohue and Julian Joy Ella with The Positive Mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to try and help you lead a more positive-minded life. Julian, say hello.
Hey there. Yes, we are bringing many positive concepts and to you today.
Yeah, we're excited about today. Julian, we have some of your bedfellows. We have we have writer, director, and producer in the studio, Susan Allen and Matt Thomas.
Hi.
Welcome. Both from Britain, if you're going to hear the accent. But they've created a very interesting YouTube video series that is up and running now, the first three shows, and it's an eight-part series?
Yeah, eight parts, yeah.
Eight parts. So three shows are up called Katie and Sean, and it deals with mental health issues. It's a young two young millennials dealing with mental health issues. And what I love about it is it really gives a picture to what depression looks like. It really gives a picture to what anxiety looks like. Often we know we struggle with these ourselves, but we don't know what we look like to other people. One of the things this YouTube series does is it helps you see people who are really struggling with depression, even though they're functioning, or people struggling with anxiety. Susan Allen and Matt Thomas, welcome to WBAI, The Positive Mind.
Thank you for having
us. Thanks for having us, yeah.
Yeah, so we have to say something a little briefly about mental health in general. Mental health is becoming a booming industry. Hollywood is writing movies all the time. And people in the general public are becoming very conversant with mental health language, descriptions, diagnoses. People walking the streets are really learning how to diagnose people and see people. And that provides a sense of power. We know that people who suffer from mental illness, mental difficulties, are stigmatized. The best thing that we can do to help destigmatize mental health is to learn the language and to be able to see the symptoms. And one of the great things about this YouTube series is it helps you see perfectly functioning people who are suffering privately, and it lets us have compassion for them and not fear them. Because often people out there in the world see people who are suffering from mental illness and they're frightened and they want to go the other way. This series invites you to look at these people and feel for them and possibly even help them and engage with them. So we have a great show ahead of us.
Yes, really exciting.
And we have a lot of good stuff because, Matt, you wrote the series.
Mm-hmm.
And you wrote it from your own personal experience. Tell people your own personal experience.
Yeah, so I have dealt with anxiety and depression to some extent for my entire life. So my earliest memories as a child are of being obsessively worried about ridiculous things that couldn't ever possibly be legitimate. Mm. They were very, very real to me. So it's really all I've ever dealt with, all I've ever known.
What a horrible experience. You look back on your childhood and you see a nervous person.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yes, absolutely. I mean, I had a, you know, on paper, I had a wonderful childhood. I had two very supportive, very loving parents, some friends, but when I think back on it, all I remember is being just completely, completely anxious most of the time.
I didn't ask you, were your parents anxious?
My mother is not, I would say. My father maybe a little. I think more the extended family. There's lots and lots of undiagnosed, fairly severe mental illness in the rest of the wider family. Yeah.
And this is a good point because often the very things we're struggling with as adults, we inherited.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know, and does that help? Do you get some compassion for yourself because you say, hey, I didn't create this, I didn't ask for this?
Well, I think it's only recently have I got there. I think the problem is, without developing something like this, you don't realize it's necessarily a problem. It's what everyone deals with. And where I would add to what you said there in the intro is that the rising portrayal of mental health in media is a double-edged sword, because mm-hmm. you know, suddenly if you don't get on with your ex-girlfriend, they're a sociopath, rather right. than just like you had a disagreement, or maybe they're not that nice a person,
right?
Or
or the word narcissism is the being word thrown narcissism. Away. Yeah,
everybody's
today.
A narcissist. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
even the president. I think.
It, right.
That's
I heard that.
Yeah.
So learn the language of mental health narcissism, folks.
I think in a way, a lot of the reason I never. I mean, it wasn't terribly available in the UK, but also the reason I never really sought help was because, like, I would see the dramatic portrayal of someone who is mentally ill on television, and I would think, okay, well, that's not me. That's an excuse to not think that's me. So I didn't crash my car like Tony Soprano. I mean, right. you know, because I had a panic attack. So I am not I do not have an anxiety problem.
Was writing this therapeutic?
No, I'm not. I'm always a little bit. I'm always a little bit distrustful when people say they wrote something as therapy mm-hmm. or something like mm-hmm. that, because I feel like if the process of typing something is your therapy, then you probably don't have enough distance from it and enough perspective on it for it to also be good.
Mm-hmm.
So no, therapy was therapy, mm-hmm. and then once I had a handle on it, I could mold it into a good piece of writing.
Wonderful. So we're going to talk later about the critic, but I'm wondering, like, during the process of doing it, I mean, did you get any further insights or compassion? I mean. You're saying that therapy is therapy, but my gosh, the critic that you're all going to see on this series is one of a kind. And I don't know, I can't help but feel like you must have gotten moments of writing this that, oh, I feel, you know, I can't be this bad with myself.
Yeah, I think it, most of what's in the show actually happened, or is something I've thought or said or had said to me, maybe just like punched up a little bit for you know, it to be in a show. So in one way it was very easy to write. I think yes, it did help to put it down on paper, and did help to sort of crystallize some of this stuff into easily kind of digestible.
Yeah.
Scenes, but yeah, if I hadn't, I think it's more like if I hadn't have done the work, I wouldn't have been able to write it, rather than writing it was itself the work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then that said, like, you're talking about the writing process, but just bringing these characters to life in the production itself, I mean, there were moments where you yourself, you edited it as well, Matt, as well as
yeah,
writing it.
And yeah, absolutely.
There are moments where you know, had to leave the room when we were doing a scene with Sean and his therapist, and it was really intense. And so there must be a sort of way where you saw these characters become their own and felt some compassion for them.
Yeah, well, I did feel compassion for them, because one of the things I really, really believe about making movies is as soon as a writer finishes their final script, it's no longer theirs. As soon as an actor picks it up, it's now their thing. So Megan and Ricky and Mike did work with what I'd written, which had nothing to do with what I'd written. So by the time we're in a therapy room and Ricky is giving, yeah, quite frankly, an incredible performance with what I've written, it's nothing to do with what I wrote anymore. And so I'm experiencing it as, oh no, look at the pain
now
this
Katie,
person's going.
Katie and Sean's right. story. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm suddenly like, I don't connect it to me anymore, and I'm this person's giving a performance. And yeah, it was uncomfortable to be there, so I was like, you know what, I'm gonna leave.
And they do nail it.
They really do.
So that
yeah.
must be a great gratification seeing your work being performed out in the world and it being nailed.
Absolutely.
They're really
yeah.
good. Susan, how did you fall in love with this anxious person?
Good question.
You know, I mean, was it a topic of conversation early on in the relationship?
Yeah, do you know what? I think it was. Mm-hmm. So definitely when we met, like, you know, we were aware that we were both 3D people with our own issues uh-huh. and our own kind of hopes and fears and struggles. And I don't think either of us were blind to that. I don't know, maybe you were. Maybe you had a revelation about my struggles later.
Certainly having somebody in your corner helps exactly. with anxiety. Yeah. So we'll talk a little bit more about that and the critic also. But I'm curious about your process as yeah. the director.
Yes.
What was the hardest part and what was the most interesting part? And how did you put all this together? This is a lot of work, a lot yeah. of exterior shots in the Lower East Side.
Yes.
Then in therapy offices. Tell us about being the director.
Wow. So this was my directorial debut.
Outstanding.
Yeah. So I'd done some theatre directing in the past, but nothing for film, and had just always wanted to do it. And so it was quite an amazing point where Matt had written this script and sort of pushed it across in front of me and said, hey, do you want to direct this? And I was like, yeah, I really do.
Fantastic.
So it was both very exciting and very daunting at the same time, knowing that I was kind of on the hook to get all these people together and unite one vision and really see this thing through and have it be successful. But yeah, I just came at it really. And I kind of have a good left brain, right brain balance going on. So I have lots of highly organized thoughts and abilities, and I've done a lot of project management in the past, which you might not think applies, but it really does.
Oh, you're talking about delegating. You bet.
The director does everything. Yeah. You end right. up having to know everyone's job and
exactly.
do it from the top. We're talking with Matt Thomas and Susan Allen, who created a show called Katie and Sean. You can find on YouTube. It'll be on every Friday at 1 p.m. when there's already 3 episodes out. It's going to be an 8-part series about mental health. Really, really exciting stuff. Here on The Positive Mind, we're talking about it. And you can go check it out at katieandseanseries.com.
Terrific. Now let's talk about Katie and Sean.
Yeah.
The first 3 episodes. Who should we talk about first? Let's talk about Katie first.
Katie first.
Let's start. So what was your objective with Katie? What did you want to show people?
Mm-hmm.
Who is Katie?
Yeah, so Katie is a 32-year-old woman. She is pretty smart, doing well in her job. But, I mean, I think the audience will get, and I mean, if you've watched any of the episodes, you'll see that she suffers from anxiety and OCD, and those are kind of things that we bring out in the series. She, in terms of who she is, she lives with a housemate called Jane, and they, you know, there's a lot of affection there, but really I think Katie's pretty lonely.
Yes, she's and low self-esteem.
Low self-esteem, you know, yeah.
And she doesn't really know what her issues are, actually. I mean,
no,
you know,
very realistically,
it's
right.
very true. First of all, you put a blonde, and she's a very attractive young lady, you know, and she doesn't get insight into what's really troubling her, mm-hmm. but she's messing with the locks on the door,
mm-hmm.
so everybody can tell this is OCD.
Yeah, I think one of the things with Katie that definitely I saw in her character, I sort of labeled her as the fixer. She likes yes. being in control.
Yeah.
You know, there's a little bit of me in there. I could see that, right?
Project manager,
Project
of course.
Manager, there you go. But I think everything that Katie sort of does is to control things, to fix things. And that's something we tried to bring out in the show.
Yeah, and what's great about that and the fact that film and TV are visual mediums is that we're watching these characters' behavior. We're not watching them
right.
talk about it as much. About, you know, as
right.
if they're in a therapy office just talking about the problem is and this. It's where we're physically getting to see them go through what they go through and say, okay, this is the behavior of somebody who might have something.
Mm-hmm,
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I also wanted to demonstrate that not every symptom is negative. So,
right.
you know, being an anxious person, you know, does make you pretty good at a lot of jobs.
Oh, absolutely.
it's not a price worth paying, but you know,
every CEO in the world is
yeah.
Here on the Positive Mind, we talk about all the benefits of ADHD. We talk about the benefits of bipolar. I mean, you're a genius. I mean, come on, and the ability to multitask. I mean, there are all kinds of powers that come along with disorders too. And I really like that idea. Also,
the light and the dark.
Well, they're driven, and Katie is driven to help people and do things for people and be competent, and that's the way she covers over her difficulties.
Yeah, I mean, she's a people pleaser, right?
Yes, she's a people pleaser, and then there's a moment when she can't even fool herself.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and we talk about triggers and mental health, and when you know you're having an issue, there's a trigger in the environment. We won't give it away, but she finally realizes. She gets to the core in her next therapy session as to what's really going on with her.
Yeah.
So the question is, what frightens Katie?
Yeah. We're hearing a little bit of Katie's music by now. That's what that is back there.
Yeah, this is by our amazing composer. It was an original score, actually, written by Johnny Martin, who is...
It's very sweet.
Yeah, one of our friends from back home and is a very talented musician. Mm-hmm.
So what frightens Katie? You'll have to watch it. I think it's in show 3 that we get the answer.
Yeah.
But what I love also about the show series is the therapists. Mm. You know, they're very compassionate, very understanding, but they're very real. You know, and they're not afraid to say, like, what frightens you? I mean, what are you hiding?
Right.
What are you hiding from you? Like, she starts so you hurt your hand. You know, and
order, straight to it.
And right away. The first scene is Katie
line.
With a Band-Aid on her hand. So you hurt your hand, and she made up a lie, right? She made something up.
Mm-hmm.
So what I loved about the therapist is, like, they'll go along with you, and then all of a sudden they'll say, let's be real, they'll say, you know, so what frightens you?
Drop a truth bomb.
What's the big thing that's behind all this? So it's fascinating stuff. It's really great to see. And then the female therapist, we'll get to Sean now. What is Sean struggling with?
Well, Sean is more the depression side of the coin, as opposed to the anxiety. So he's just
he's further along.
Oh yeah, he's
anxiety ends up leading to depression.
Yeah,
for those of you who don't know, chronic anxiety is just going to eventually you're going to give up on the anxiety and fall into a depression. Mm. And so go ahead.
Yeah, he's deep in one. So he's retreated from the world quite a lot. Doesn't really have a lot of friends or outlets beyond himself.
And he self-medicates a lot.
Oh yeah, absolutely. He's a drinker. He's a distractor. Food, or anything he can get his hands on.
Yeah, but he's just like a walking zombie. Mm. I mean, and the actor in it, I don't know what his name is.
Ricky Goldman,
You know, just the picture of depression. The series starts with him sitting on the park bench in the fall with the leaves, you know, changing colors. It was a perfect scene for showing a depressive.
He has the
glazed eyes of a depressive.
Mm. Mm.
And the muted expression.
Yeah.
But he has a friend.
A friend?
His friend is his depression. He is resisting in this series. And Armand used to say, he would have clients come to him with depression. And you know, and once they got close to really exposing the depression, you know, and Armand would hand the client a pillow and say, this is your depression. And Armand would say, now, let me take your depression. And there would be a tug of war. And the client would say, no. I'm not giving up my depression. I don't want it. I don't want to give this up.
Absolutely.
So Mike is, or Sean rather, is really comfortable in his depression. We'll see. Well, we'll see.
And that's why you have to watch the show on YouTube. Yes.
I love the therapist. You know, his answer to the therapist was that, how many ways are you going to find out that I have no friends?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, ask me in roundabout ways that how many friends do you have?
Mm.
So Sean is the picture of depression. And we're talking again to Susan Allen and Matt Thomas, who have this YouTube series out. The first 3 shows are on. It's called Katie and Sean. And the first 3 shows are out, and the rest of the shows will be coming every Friday. When I was watching, it was like the House of Cards. I just sort of snuggled in and got to watch each
episode.
Yeah,
you can binge a couple episodes.
You
right
really
now
can
on YouTube
binge.
If you just look up Katie and Sean. And we're talking with Matt Thomas, who is the writer of the show, and Susan Allen, who directed the show. Yeah,
I'm curious. You know, so we have to talk about the critic.
Yep.
So Sean does have a companion.
He does.
And it's like a friend of his. And in this series, you're going to see this character who is and isn't alive, you know, but it gives a life presentation of the critic. Is your critic mad as the writer this severe?
Yeah, absolutely. So I feel like the major thing I think with depression is it's sometimes it's not always you're the worst person in the world, you are terrible, and yelling at you. Sometimes it's I feel like sometimes it manifests as, hey, yeah, you don't need to go running. Hey, you don't need to go to this party because, you know, you actually want to stay in and watch Wayne's World three times. But you,
right.
So it sometimes it
helps rationalize.
Yeah, it rationalizes, right. Cajoles. It's like it is like a person that's trying to get you to do something, and that thing is nothing.
Almost nothing. Yeah, exactly. Ironically,
so it seemed like a. I wrote a draft without the Bob character, who kind of personifies Sean's depression, and it was, you know, visually not that interesting.
Right, it would be kind of like a vignette or something like that, sort of like a depressed guy on the bench and a couch.
It would have been possible to. It would have put a lot on the actor, so it would have been. It would have required, like, you know, Moonlight levels of like subtext in the performance, right. Which, you know, not everyone can do.
I'm sure Ricky could have done it.
I'm sure
it's more that, like, from a dramatic perspective as the director, I'm like, I want to see conflict. Every scene I'm like, well, where's the conflict?
Right. Yeah. And if I have especially coming from theater.
Exactly. And if I see one guy, you know, sat on a bench on his own, that's great. I can get conflict for a little bit, but give me something more. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
It made it much more visually interesting. It also gave us an outlet for like jokes and comedy, which
the critic badly needed.
Yeah. Because when somebody is Mike, who plays Bob, because he doesn't have to worry about being relatable or likable or real, is able to be the sort of ultimate evil person, which is, you know, which can be pretty attractive.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like a character out of an American movie.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a thug. I mean, he's really like a Goodfellas character.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, he says nobody likes you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and of course, Bob isn't the one who's saying this. Sean is saying this to himself.
Yeah.
You know, you're disgusting. You have nothing to contribute to the world. I mean, he's a thug.
Yeah.
I mean. So depression as the thug, as the companion thug that we carry around, takes a lot of effort, a lot of work to get rid of. Tell us more about, did the actor have a hard time? Did he go into his zone with some of this material? And
are you talking about Ricky who played Sean?
Ricky who played him. Mm-hmm. Did he have any difficulty with this?
Oh, so are you talking about Bob or Sean?
Ricky. Ricky. And now I'm talking about the actor who's actually hearing this voice.
Okay. Yeah. I think I don't want to speak too much for him, but I think he has like personal experience with some of this stuff, and so, he certainly did embody it. He's a very, very good actor, so he was able to sort of switch in and out. But it was fascinating. As soon as Susan was like rolling sound and rolling camera, you'd sort of see his face change, and it's like, oh, well, wow, okay.
Well, even just before, isn't it? I mean, that's filming this kind of material. You wouldn't think it, but I mean, our crew and our cast had really good time on set. Everyone was laughing and joking. It was great. And then suddenly it was like, oh no, we've got to switch into this material now.
Okay, somebody's dying now, folks.
Right, yeah. Hopefully not that. But yeah, so it's, you know, there were moments where, for instance, Megan, we had to go and sit her in a room so she could just build up and be ready for the scene.
Absolutely.
And it's about knowing, you know, who and how to give space to people.
Yeah, I'm sure having Bob, the character Bob, who is the critic of Sean's character, his sort of his inner mind, is great to have for Ricky as an actor, because you have this external stimuli instead of having to imagine
all of
what someone goes through. You get to physically experience and react to a human personification of an inner depression.
I mean,
my God. So it kind of, again, I mean, you guys are... masterfully using the visual medium to sort of illustrate all this stuff.
Thank
is,
you.
Is playing a depressed character difficult?
You know, it's weird because as an actor, most people come from a methody kind of background who have went to theater school or anything like that, and a lot of the time you have to find a place in your life or a situation in your life in which you can substitute where you felt that way. Perhaps it was after a relationship or if you've experienced it yourself. And it's always a zone that kind of takes over your body for a little while.
Right. Mm-hmm. And in this case, Mike is the actor. Ricky.
Ricky.
Mike, Ricky, Ricky, Bob, Sean.
There's only two guys, and now all of a sudden I'm saying four names.
Ricky
is the actor plays Sean.
You won't speak for him, but you could tell he's somebody who's familiar with this drama.
Absolutely, yeah.
This experience.
Yeah, sure. Yes, but I think what really impressed me was the ability to turn it on, and so he could just. But the funny thing was that him and Mike, who plays Bob, were actually like really really good friends on set, and
of course,
and Mike is like one of the nicest people in the world as well, and it's
usually necessary to have a great nice person to play the evil person.
Oh, it's fantastic.
It's almost necessary.
Well, then you get a lot of levels and you get a lot of variation in the evil, and we were talking about that earlier. You know, we were saying like it's much more interesting, for instance, in episode 2, if we go from a kind of cajoling, I'm your friend, oh, don't do that, don't do that, to, no, seriously, don't do that, to take it.
It's terrifying. That's why you see every gangster movie, you see the really big bad gangster deliver a silly monologue about, like, I don't know, candy bars or something before they chop a guy's hand off.
Something very
unmenacing. Tony Soprano worried about the horse.
The kind of like juxtaposition of it's quite funny. Like, so knowing what this guy's capable of, him joking around becomes terrifying.
We have a lot of ground to cover. We're going to take a musical break. We are here with Matt Thomas and Susan Allen, who have created and directed and written a YouTube video series on a mental health topic dear to us, anxiety and depression, the personification of anxiety and depression. That is on Friday at 1 p.m.
But
also three shows are up. Go ahead.
And if you wanted to watch it right now, you could right after our radio show, of course.
KatieandSean.com.
You could go to KatieandSeanSeries.com or go to YouTube and just look up Katie and Sean. It'll show up right on the top in the first couple of episodes, which you'll know a lot about after listening to us talk about.
We have another minute, so I guess I could ask, what's your favorite part?
Ooh.
In the first three shows, because we don't want to give out 4 to 8.
Honestly, just what we've been talking about. My favorite is episode 2, seeing that arc from kind of the mental abuse to the almost physicalized abuse. Mm-hmm. That is mental abuse, but you know.
Yes, of course, of course.
That's my
favorite. Bob is quite physical in the series.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he grabs Sean by the throat, you know, and he really looks him straight in the eye, as direct as can be, and says, "You're worthless.
Yeah.
You know, you have no value."
And that actually was the turning point for a friend of mine who didn't realize all the way through the episode until the end, who was like, "Oh, I see."
Yeah, I had trouble the first time watching it, that this is not a friend. This is not a roommate.
Right.
This is a companion. This is a figment of his imagination.
An
embodiment.
A Fight Club experience happened.
Right. And yourself, Matt?
Episode 2 is probably my favorite of the ones that have been seen so far. Although in episode 3, I really really enjoy the particular episode that Katie has. I mean, enjoy is the wrong word, but I think Susan really really hit it out of the park in terms of like the coloring and the sort of uncomfortableness of that shot. It was also fun to edit.
Going to say shout out to Megan for that.
Yeah,
absolutely. And we're talking about Katie and Sean, the YouTube series you can find on YouTube if you just take a quick search on there, with Matt Thomas and Susan Allen, who brought this show to our attention, which is great. Here, you're listening to The Positive Mind on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. We're going to take a quick musical break, and we'll be right back. Solitude by Ben Webster. I think it's a nice song to play when we're talking about depression. But
you bet it is. Yeah, because it is a living isolation. You feel like you're the only person in the world. I mean, yeah. Even though the critic is common for most of us, if not all of us, we all carry a critic around. But when you're really in the depths of depression, I think you really do believe you are the only person in the world. And Amon used to say people who have depression believe that they're unlovable and that they'll never be loved. And certainly Sean has that look as he walks around. I wanted to get back to, so we have another half an hour, and I wanted to get back to the two of you working together and advice that for couples that work together.
Therapy? No.
Like, for instance, I guess when because you did say something in the first half hour, but did you have like timeout zones? Like, we're not going to talk about this over dinner, or, you know,
not,
we need a break from this for a weekend.
Not really.
I don't think we could, just because of the schedule we were on, quite frankly.
Is that right?
No, it was pretty intense. I mean, Matt not only wrote it, but edited it, and you were editing like every weekend for...
Yeah, how long was that process for you? Because the editing process can be months long.
Yeah, it was pretty long. I mean, I think
5 months.
5 months.
Yeah.
Wow. Editing just 5 months? Only 5 months?
January to May.
He's it's like, really that. It's really that point. Long.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Post-production is the longest part.
Yeah.
Of
yeah, that was the process.
Are you serious?
Always, yeah.
That was the thing. Like, I am not an editor and had to, well, I guess I am now, but I had to learn it as I went.
Oh, you did a great job.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And the thing that makes Susan a really wonderful director is that she is completely uncompromising. So when the script says something, or when there's a right way to do something, she will not accept it being done any other way. Even if it means, like, you know, staying up all night, emailing local bars to try and get to shoot there.
Right? I mean, that makes me sound like I just like my way or the
project
highway,
manager.
Which isn't true. No. A lot of this project was collaborative, but I see what you're saying in terms of, like, quality. I was pretty on my game in terms of wanting this to be a high quality
show.
Which
is very, very important.
I think you should maybe own that a bit more, because it's like, it is your way or the highway. You're the director. You're in charge. So there were so many things in the script that I would, if I was in charge, I would have just been like, you know, this is turning into more trouble than it's worth. Let's get rid of it. Mm-hmm. But Suze wouldn't have it, and the show is so much better for it. Like, there was a period where we had a bar scene, and we had it. Susan wanted like 9 extras. And we were having real trouble with it. And I was like, well, let's just shoot them really close. Like, we can just, like, put in sounds of people.
Yeah. And who won that fight?
Suze. Because
she did.
Because she's like, no, we're going to do the extra work it requires to get all the extras. Uh-huh. And then now it looks legit. It looks like a real show.
And so this show, you hope to have, what kind of audience when you were creating it did you have in mind? I mean, I know we have the people who perhaps are experiencing anxiety and depression.
Yeah. Well, I think there's two ways to sort of approach that. For me, I feel like it's a pretty universal show. Mm-hmm. I think there's one level where you can say, well, everyone has a brain, and that brain works in a certain way, and it's worth kind of having a conversation about how much of that puts us on automatic thoughts and makes us do certain things without us being conscious of it. So on one level, I think it's for everybody. On another level, I think particularly it could work pretty well for people who have friends or family who suffer with anxiety and depression.
Yep. Sure.
And maybe there's a bit of trouble talking about that or starting a conversation about that.
Mm-hmm.
I think seeing something, a visual aid, say, pointing to, oh, that guy, you know how what he's going through. It's sort of a bit like that.
Right.
This is sort of a practice in show not tell.
Exactly.
in a great way, in a very important and kind of sensitive topic, you know.
And I think it works across generations, because certainly, I mean, you know, Matt and I have talked a lot about cultural differences in terms of mental health and, you know, how much we're British, so obviously we repress everything. So, you know, so there's cultural differences and there's generational differences. And I think something that I found amazing from friends and family who are watching the show is these amazing conversations that I've never had before with them, because we can kind of point to this thing and say,
sure,
oh, this character, I'm not really talking about me, but, it gives you a way in.
And it's a good way to just cut to the chase. What is your critic telling you today? I mean, if you see somebody who's depressed, what level of dialogue are you having with yourself?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great service that you're doing with that part of the show.
And it is amazing when you have a vocabulary for something. I think often that's the biggest hurdle, is when you can't name it, and when it's just this weird thing that sort of controls you and you don't know.
Yeah.
But if you have a shorthand with, say, friends or family, you can say, oh, well, it's that dude again, or it's, you know, my inner critic giving me.
What I like about it also is that it makes you realize that depression doesn't last forever. And not that this gets resolved, but you can't live this way for very long, no matter what. I mean, the way Sean is living, you cannot live this way for a year.
It's unsustainable.
You know, it's just unsustainable. So, and he is making progress in the therapy. You can see that. So, who is the audience for this? I think it's for anybody, even fans of film. I love the way that it's shot, the exterior shots, and even in the therapist's office.
I'm glad you said that. I think I had two goals, and the first by a long way was to make an entertaining piece of entertaining series.
Yes.
I mean, if it hadn't been interesting and worth seeing as a piece of drama, then I wouldn't have made it. The secondary thing, I think, was to give my version of a realistic portrayal of something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think I'd never really seen my experience on film before, and now it exists. And so I think that's something I'm fairly proud of, in that it's not the traditional portrayal of, you know, one kind of depression or one kind of anxiety. To make the point that everyone's experience is individual.
Right down to the sibling rivalry. I mean, this is another subset. I mean, the sibling is trying to talk Sean out of it, you know, get a life, she says. Another critic.
So that's episode 5 that is not quite out yet.
Okay,
but stay tuned.
But it's for you to watch with your siblings. I mean, if you have a depressive nature and your family does, and I mean, most people can look at their family and say, okay, we don't have depression, or yes, we do have depression. In your case, Matt, you can say there is an underlying anxiety running things here.
That was my favorite episode to write.
Five
of all of them. Yeah. So Sean goes for a drink with his sister, and you see that his sister has the same issues, but she's dealt with them in a different way. by effectively just saying they don't exist, and it's like there is some logic to her argument.
Yeah.
It's not a black and white discussion.
And you hope that also all the characters that show up in your show tend to be somebody that we know has that's their approach to these mental health issues, and we can kind of understand where it comes from, see it, and decide for ourselves how we want to address these kinds of problems.
Did you guys have to get permits by the city to do your exterior shots?
I can't answer that question in an open setting.
So you guys were sneaking around with cameras.
No, it's not actually sneaking. I did a lot of research on this.
Oh, good. Well, I know you wanted to
get... you don't have a tripod, you're all...
Yeah. Yes, that's it. It's the old tripod trick, you know. Yeah. Our DP, Mark Fraunhofer, actually, he had this amazing contraption where it was like a tripod that he wore, like this
a steadicam
thing. That's it. You can see I'm up on the technical lingo.
Absolutely.
Like, get that thing. That's
the thing with the steady and the
brilliant.
Cam.
Real, real. It's not a tripod, is it?
Technocratic director.
Yes.
So, guys, what do you find is different about your show compared to what's on right now? What's out in the world? I mean, what is your show? What do you feel like it's bringing to the table? If you don't mind me asking.
No, not at all.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Bad pizza.
I think first of all, it's a slightly less melodramatic portrayal of something. So,
absolutely.
There are depressed people who literally can't get out of bed. Mm-hmm. There are also depressed people who function at least on that level. And it's like, well, I can get up and get to work, etc. And so, it shows more than just the most extreme end of either, and the kinds of, you know, still debilitating and still, you know, far from ideal circumstances that people just live with.
I mean, in Hollywood, we have, for example, that movie Split that just came out. It's sort of like 24 personalities, and it's like, this is the most extreme dramatic portrayal of multiple personality disorder possible.
And that's sort of glorified as well. Right. That's just so far from what
we're doing.
It's
kind of strange. I totally agree with you. I mean, I really think your show does, upon the couple of episodes that I was able to watch, illustrates sort of a plight for the functioning depressive or the functioning person with anxiety. And it's almost harder to watch that in some ways, because it's like, how many of these people do I know? And am I one of these people? Or is this something, you know, I need to think about? Or what is it? And can I identify this in the world that I'm living in? You know?
I sort of looked at the scenes, and we all thought a lot about not being overly melodramatic. Like even some of the more dramatic scenes, we always asked ourselves, well, is this too much? Mm-hmm. Like, is this really over-egging the pudding?
Right.
Like, is that a very British phrase? Right.
Yeah, I've never heard that, but I know what you mean.
Over-egging the pudding?
Yeah.
Are we leading people down?
I have to say also, though, that the interior shots were unique. I mean, I think the series really portrays apartment life.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, nothing else. New York City vibe going
like,
on.
Nothing else you see out there. I mean, you can hear the loneliness. Mm-hmm. You can hear it. Mm-hmm. You can see it with these quiet moments in, especially with the long hallway in Katie's apartment.
Yes.
Yeah. You know,
she's
which is
down.
Like a tribute to Taxi Driver with Travis Bickle. we don't know if you did that deliberately, but
well, there is actually a lot of Katie. We talked about her as a fixer. There's a lot of her running after things, like physically thinking that she can externally solve this problem.
Right.
And we that was a choice, you know. We had her running up and down corridors, running down subway platforms, and, you know, hopefully coming to the conclusion that maybe it's not on the exterior that she needs to be focusing on.
Alluding to what Kevin was just saying, you guys do illustrate New York City's sort of loneliness in a very nice way. I was born and raised here, so watching it, it was like, oh, I was like, yeah, this is, I've had those experiences.
I
get that. Yeah, it's weird because people say, oh, it's not lonely, it's New York City. There's 9 million people, you know, almost 9 million people in New York City, and it's sometimes it can be the loneliest because it's that way.
London is the same way.
Yeah, I've heard. And I feel like we must share that in a sense, you know, when it comes to London and New York City. And it is a little bit of an ode to New York City's experience, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think just coming back to your question about what do you think Katie and Sean brings that other things don't bring, I think what I was excited is the format, the webisode format, and the fact that it was a dramatic series.
Right.
I think more and more there are, you know, people on YouTube talking about their own issues, which certainly has its place, and it's amazing to see some of these people.
Right,
you know,
a lot of blogging, a lot of...
Exactly. Yeah. But this, in a way, I think what you can do with a drama is, you know, peel back that fourth wall and peek in, and it still feels real. It still feels like you are looking
What is the process to get on YouTube a series like this? Is there any complication?
Well,
it's a very
in.
Simple thing.
Well, you know, the wonderful thing about choosing the format of YouTube is that it's physically available to everybody who has a computer, phone, device of any kind.
Free.
Instantly.
Yes.
So, I mean, for all of our listeners out there, I mean, physically right now, this second, you could go to YouTube and look up Katie and Sean, and you'd find the show.
I think, just to jump in, sorry to interrupt you, but something that I'm finding really interesting is you get analytics on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
And do you know what's interesting? There is about 80% male to female ratio watching the show
really?
At the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
really?
Well, I was kind of surprised
interesting.
By interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, they give you analytics about countries. Do you guys have a specific country that's watching? Is it American mostly?
America and the UK.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But to that point, I'm really not surprised by
You're
that.
Not?
Because, no, depression is a secret, you know, and men need to know how other men are dealing with it or not dealing with it. Mm-hmm. I think men are much more vulnerable to mental problems, mental difficulties, certainly social pressures, and acting out because of those social pressures. So I'm not surprised. And, you know, both actors are really compelling looking. That's what I think is another piece of this series. I mean, Sean's hair is enough to take you back to the 70s.
Yeah,
you could
right?
just sit there and watch him with his hair and his eyes glazed.
Yeah.
You know, and
they're
Katie with her cheeks and her blonde hair.
Yeah.
I mean, it gives a really good, nice balance presentation with what they're suffering with. That, you know, they still look like functioning normal people. So I think you're right, Matt. I think what you do that's different is that you normalize, you really go right down the middle with this and don't really exaggerate and make it drama. It's, the drama is just in watching. You can really feel, you can be there when you're watching this series and be with those characters.
Yeah. The other thing about knowing something about this and having some experience with this is you never really get to unlearn what you've learned. And so you can see someone being like weirdly defensive when you say something, or you can like see someone like flying off the handle, and you have such a greater empathy for it, and it so it helps you to be a kind of a better person when someone's I had somebody get super defensive like about and really aggressive about something I said the other day, and I rather than kind of, you know, yelling at them, I well, I may be still yelled at them, but I was
you
able
don't carry it around.
I was able to have a lot more perspective about it and be like, oh, this isn't about me, is it?
Right.
Yeah.
And those are the perfect words: defensive and aggression.
So, yeah. do you guys plan on creating more of this show? Do you guys plan on moving to a feature? What are your plans in store in the future with all this?
Good question. We haven't really talked about a season two, and I don't think we should right now. Like, let's have season one right out there.
Season one isn't even out yet, fully. Come on.
You know. House of Cards is up to five series.
I know.
In treatment went into five series. Wow. So I you got to go with this.
Got to go with it.
Go ahead. So tell us, what's your plan?
Matt, you want to make a feature, don't you?
I do. I want to make a feature film purely because this series has kind of demystified it a little bit, and the amount of usable footage and the amount of length of story we could have made, we always basically made a feature film anyway. So I'd like to do that, and I'd like that challenge. Suze has talked about making a short film, which
on the opposite.
I feel like short films are weird.
Well, these are essentially mini short films, actually. Each one chooses sort of one thematic point and sort of brings it home.
A short film's kind of like a calling card, which we already have. But I think, you know, it's the big directorial thing, isn't it?
So, what would your feature entail? Since it seems to be an interest of yours.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I want to make something very, very character driven. Mm-hmm. So, the notion of like sort of one person over a short period of time you know, dealing with something sort of small and relatable is what I've been much more into a lot recently, even with all genre of movie. There was a film out a couple of years ago called Nightcrawler, which is one of my favorite films of the last few years, purely because it doesn't let itself get too big. It's a very, very compelling, very, very unique story, but it's still just one
also
guy.
The acting, Riz Ahmed was incredible.
Oh,
the character himself is really big. Yeah. You don't need anything else besides.
It's still a guy driving around LA. Right. No, the world's not ending. There's nothing falling.
Total psychopath.
Buildings aren't falling down. Right.
Yeah. And
we saw that together, you and I. Remember, with Armand.
Oh,
we went to Nightcrawler with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Oh, yeah.
Remember?
Did we see
with the
that
guy
together?
With the video camera who goes.
Well, I know the movie.
Fabricates
yes.
CC.
I can't imagine.
Yes,
I forgot that
Armand,
we saw that all together.
Wow. But the character is like the perfect life, huge size character. You don't need all this other big stuff surrounding it. We'd love to see what he would look like in treatment, getting therapy.
Mm. I mean, there's another horror movie called Stoker, which is again like. This one teenage girl. I mean, so those are the kind of films I want to make, and you can do kind of any movie you like in that way.
Absolutely.
You need the bucks for that, though.
On the low budget side, they are character driven.
Right,
that's
exactly
how it works. Yeah. I mean, a lot of the time when you've got less than $10 million, you've got a movie that's about the actors and you know, just a really good writing, really good actors.
Yeah.
So I would like you to do something. Now this is just a wish, watching the whole series. Get to the bottom of those therapist questions to Sean and to Katie, and really, you know, go down the rabbit hole with those what answers they give to those basic questions. People are gonna love this series. It's Katie and Sean on the YouTube channel. You're gonna see you know, how you can function. You can be a functioning person and nobody will know how much you're suffering and how isolated you are, and the series is great for that. It's also great visually. It's a great, and the music in the background is terrific.
Yes, and we've been talking enough about the show. Now you can finally go watch it. Now that our show is just coming to an end, we've been talking with British husband duo,
and how can they reach
Matt Thomas and Susan Allen? Their show is on the website katieandseanseries.com, or you can go straight to YouTube and look up Katie and Sean. It'll show up right on the top.
Susan, how do people reach you? Because people are going to want to give
you
feedback.
I mean, you can contact us. If you go to katieandseanseries.com, there's a contact page. So you can just contact us straight through there.
You can follow us. I'm at Mr. Matt Thomas on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, we could do Twitter.
You have a Twitter account.
I don't.
Oh, my gosh.
I know.
Just one last question.
Is that surprising?
Yeah, of course. Tell me.
Well, you know.
Yeah, I'm sort of a big deal.
You know you've made it when you have a Twitter. I don't have a Twitter account.
You know
Susan, do you have a Twitter account?
I do. I'm at Daydreamhead.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. But just so people know, this wasn't a big budget, right? I mean, you made this happen on a relatively...
I don't recall there being a budget.
Budget?
I recall there being a current account.
So
it's all gone, Matt.
You guys funded it yourself from your own personal bank account.
We did, yeah.
What did we spend?
It was around $10,000, which is,
you know,
a lot for us, but not a lot in terms
of
movie land. And we made it last.
You did. You guys did made it look... 50,000.
Most
seriously.
Of it
Thank
went
you.
On.
I
most of it went on sandwiches.
You'd be
I'm
surprised.
Not joking. But most of that money is just feeding people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for being with us today.
People see the credits of this. Go past the credits. You'll see a tribute to us here at the Positive
Mind
Center.
Oh, yeah.
And we were great to have you both here today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for talking with us today. And I'm going to play the theme song.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how long it is, but we'll have a loop a little bit at the end of the show. Thank you for tuning into the Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM. And it's been Julian Joiello, Kevin O'Donohue, Matt Thomas, and Susan Allen in the studio today. Stay tuned every Tuesday and Wednesday at 1 p.m. right here on WBAI.
Wednesday, 5 p.m., right here, 99.5.